well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me on the program today. We're going to blow up the normal format here. We've got two lengthy conversations with members of the NRA board. Amanda Suffolkool, Jim Wallace, also the Gun Owners Action League. Wallace elected the 76th board member, but was serving on the board of the NRA. And we're going to take you, you know, behind the scenes of how the reformers had such a good day on Monday, where the organization goes from here. So I will tell you that neither Suffolkool or Wallace imposed any sort of conditions for me. They didn't say, hey, don't ask about this. This was, again, some pretty wide-ranging conversations with both of these individuals. And this is not the last conversation that we're going to have. We're going to be talking with other board members going forward. I have put in request to speak with the NRA's new executive vice president, Doug Hamlin, as well as NRA president Bob Barr. And hopefully we'll have those conversations in the near future as well. But I, after such a crucially important board of directors meeting, I thought it was important that gun owners hear directly from some of the board members who were successful in a, I consider this to be a change election, not only in terms of who was put on the board by the members, but also the makeup of the NRA officers, I think was a change election. And that came from the board itself. So without further ado, let's kick off the conversation with NRA Board of Director Amanda Suffolkool. Take a look and a listen. Amanda, thank you so much for coming to the program today. It's good to see you.
Oh, it's good to see you. Thanks for inviting me.
Absolutely. You look remarkably well rested for a woman who spent more than 12 hours in a board meeting on Monday.
12.25. Yes, indeed. And but who's counting? Yeah, there's that. And then fighting the air and storms and everything yesterday to get back to Ohio. So, yeah, a little bit of all that, but it's worth it. It really is.
Well, and you know, let me just start with an open-ended question. How do you feel about this past weekend's events, including Monday's board meeting?
Optimistic. I feel really, really, really good about it, because I think that there were like two contingents that people saw going into the entire weekend. And I think in the end, there are players from both sides that are going to be working together to meet some goals that the NRA set over the course of the weekend. So I'm pretty optimistic about all of it.
That is very good to hear. And as you say, there were these sort of two contingents, right? I've been calling them the reformers and the old guard.
Right.
But, you know, whatever name you want to use for either group, that's fine. You know, clearly, I'm someone who believed that some reforms were needed. I wanted to see some changes made. I was very pleased to see the resolution voted down at the members' meeting on Saturday about supporting a move to Texas. And let's talk about that, because you actually got up and you spoke against this resolution, right? What were your concerns about the resolution?
Well, I cannot say I'm for or against the move to Texas, because I don't have any information or enough information. So I am an information-driven person. So if we're going to move, I need to know why we're moving, what we're going to, what are we leaving, what are we headed, you know, all this. Why is Texas the choice? And nothing against Texas, nothing against Virginia. It's not tied, in a lot of people's minds, the NRA's Virginia building is tied to New York, and it's actually not. Those are two separate states. So what I wanted is more information. I'm an analytic person. I mean, I've spent my entire career as an engineer in operations, moving plants, consolidating plants, picking up companies that were in trouble. So I want to see data to make the best decisions. The thing that I got out of the resolution, or at least I perceive that I got, because, you know, it's read to you and it's coming at you like a fire hose.
Right.
So there were a couple things in that meeting that I'm not sure everybody really picked up on. One was when the agenda was set, backing up, because President Trump was in New York in a court on Friday, we could not have him at the NRA for what is typically on the Friday event.
Yeah.
So it got moved to Saturday. So now there are very many people that are sitting in the members meeting who also want to sit and hear President Trump. So because of that, and I fully understand why the officers of the NRA for the members meeting said, look, we're going to make this a 2-hour meeting. It's got a beginning, it's got an end, and it's got a hard stop at 12 o'clock. So that was the first piece. So I got that. And then as we started to work through it, what I believe I heard in the resolution, and I've not seen it in writing. So you know how words come flying by and you think this is what you heard, but did you really? Was that the resolution was inferring that the members are demanding, insisting, voting, stating, we're moving to Texas and we expect the board to do that.
Can I interrupt for just 1 second? Because you talked about the timing of this. So there was a hard stop time. And if folks have never been to a members meeting before, sometimes, I mean, it's open-ended, right? Generally, it'll wrap up around 12:30 or so. It's generally 2-2.5 hours, but there's not usually a hard stop. So right. How long into the meeting, or maybe how many more minutes were remaining is a better question, when this resolution got dropped and started being discussed?
20? Maybe.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Maybe something like that. I know that when I got up onto the stage, there were people, because if you look at some of the pictures and some of the videos, you'll see that there were two mics, a for and against and a for and against.
Mm-hmm.
So, and the way that the officers do it is when, no matter which order you go up there, if you're a for guy, you stand at the for mic, the next person they want to hear is an against guy, right? So they want to go back and forth that way.
Right.
So just to keep that piece in mind, because there was a little bit of mix up in, they said I was next and Don Saba was standing in the four column and the members pretty much shouted him down and let me go first. But I'm very grateful because we were right at the end of the clock.
Yeah.
So I'm sitting there watching the clock, watching the person in front of me speak. And finally, there's people behind me. I stepped back down and I said, I hate to tell you this, guys, but if you're okay with it, I'm going to call the vote or it's not happening. And they said, okay. I mean, I wanted to explain to them because I'm going to cut them off.
Yeah.
So then I went back up to my spot, got the opportunity to say what I said. And then I called the vote. And I called the vote with less than 3 minutes left of the hard stop.
And of course, the resolution failed. And it was overwhelming. I don't know if it was the bright lights or whatever, but I know that Charles Cotton couldn't tell who had carried that vote, but was informed that, yes, the noes carried the day. So the resolution fails.
Right.
So that Saturday, and that was sort of the first sign for those of us who are watching back at home.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
There's one more thing I want to say about that, though.
Yeah.
Because I don't know exactly what it was, but one of the things we wanted to do in that resolution to cause it to stop was I didn't want to put the board in a position to where when you're in the meeting on Monday fighting for whatever you're fighting for, that then they rolled out the members have demanded that we move. Right. Which would have been an additional level of pressure on these two contingents as they're already arguing for what they believe is the best for the NRA.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
okay.
that was really my point to it was don't pin us yet because we don't have enough information.
Right. And okay. I think that's a perfectly valid argument. I mean, honestly, as I was watching the debate, I'm thinking to myself, there are a lot of really good points made about not having this information, right? Not knowing how much it's going to cost, not knowing, being told, oh, this is going to be a benefit. There was talk about, the talent pool in Texas compared to Washington, D.C. and Northern Virginia. But I'll be honest with you, Amanda, again, I don't have all the information. I don't know if a move is necessary or the best thing. But my first thought is, OK, if you want to stay close to Washington, D.C., and there's an argument to be made that the NRA should be close to, the seat of power in this country. There's a little strip of West Virginia, right, that borders Maryland, Pennsylvania and Virginia. I have friends who live there. They commute to D.C. Now, it's about 2 hours by train. But it's a hell of a lot closer than Texas. It's pretty affordable. West Virginia is a pro Second Amendment state. So, you don't have to worry about Maryland gun laws or even Virginia getting bad. I just want to throw it out there that if a relocation, is in the cards, West Virginia seems to make a lot of sense to me, but that's just my two cents. So you were able to at least take that bit of pressure off of the board, and the NRA members who were in attendance at the members meeting were able to take that pressure off of the board. So and by the way, thank you to all of the members
who voted,
who voted, who were there, who could have been standing in line waiting for the Secret Service pat down to get a good seat at the leadership forum. But thank you to those members who stayed there. So then Monday morning rolls around, and I'm probably skipping a lot of what you talked about behind the scenes on Saturday and Sunday. But did you have any idea going in? We learned that Jim Wallace had been elected 76th director, right? Mm-hmm. So he was sort of the candidate of choice for the reform slate. Mm-hmm. That was another positive bit of good news. Mm-hmm. But how confident were you when you went into the board meeting on Monday that the reformers were going to be successful in getting some of their candidates in officers' positions?
Well, I went in, I mean, we had met a couple of times, this group talking strategy. You know, what are you going to do? Because one of the things you may know and others may not know is that once you go into the board meeting, your phones get locked down. Mm-hmm. Nobody's recording. Nobody's texting. Nobody's anything. And for me, I don't even wear a watch, which means that I don't even have a clue as to what time it is. It's like I'm going to have to get a board meeting watch only so that I know what's going on, because that's killing me. But So you better know what you're going to do. And if this happens, who's this? What if this happens, who's that? So the first thing is we get in there and find out that the elections are going to be an executive session. So when you turn around and you looked behind us, they had set up a series of seats, and I don't know how many there were. There were no seats left. When you lock down the phone, they're put in this little cage kind of thing that that stuff doesn't get in, stuff doesn't get out, and then they hand your phone back to you. They didn't have as many phone cages as they usually. Well, they had as many as they usually do. They didn't have enough for the audience, so people had to get like coat check claim tickets for their phones, right? Because it was a packed room. And so it took us an hour to agree on the agenda, to move that out and to position things so that the people who were there to watch got to see what they wanted to see, and that we didn't go into executive session and stay in there for hours and make them all just stand around. So we did two things. One is we moved the elections out into the light of day, and we moved all the executive session stuff to the very end of the program so that when we went into executive session, they could all go back to their hotel rooms or wherever and know that they're not missing anything.
That's which, again, I think is appropriate and is the way it should be done. But that was and that vote carried, right? But it was pretty close. I mean, it was 33-27, I think it was.
I don't know, but it took an hour to negotiate exactly what we were going to do for the agenda. I mean, and so that was a sign, I think, of, okay, it's not going to be a push for either team. You know, one is not going to walk away. You know, it's going to be something. So there was that. But the change group had won the day. So I was feeling pretty confident. Then we had the first of the officers election, and Bob Barr won that. And I don't remember the numbers, because I look at it, it's like, okay, we did what we did, and then here we're all in this together. So he won that, and we went into lunch going, okay, if that's the case, where's the change candidates? Where's the reform candidates? What's gonna happen next? And you try to go in, and whether you win or you lose, you have to respect all of the other board members. I mean, you're in there, you know, you're in there. Think of it like you're fighting with your siblings.
Right.
You respect them. You love them. You're all on the same page. You're all with the same goals, but you disagree with them at this point. And so that's a piece of how you need to be, how we need to be. And there's not a member on that board that is there because they want to do harm to the NRA. In their view of whatever harm is, we may fundamentally disagree with how things should work, but they're all donating their time, talent, and treasure. And some of these, I mean, there's not any really young people on the NRA board, because it's a lot of time, and frankly, it's a lot of money. And, you know, and so you have to get to a spot in your life where you have the flexibility to take a week and go somewhere and not use the family vacation. You have to, you know, all of that kind of stuff. So for these board members, they're giving up time, and where they are in the clock of life, time is the most precious thing they have.
Yeah, absolutely. So as you say, Bob Barr is elected president.
Mm-hmm.
He was the choice of the nominating committee.
Correct.
Then first vice president comes and the reform candidate wins. Second vice president election, reform candidate wins. Right. Executive vice president, reform candidate wins. So can you explain, Amanda, do you know why was Bob Barr the choice of the board for president, and then the reform slate the choice for all of the other officers?
Yeah. So for either side, why wasn't it a clean slate, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. What I believe I heard after the fact, because I talked to a couple of people who are like, yeah, I voted split ticket, if you will, if you call it like that. Voted split ticket. And their belief really is that Bob Barr, as a former elected official, what was he, a congressman?
Mm-hmm.
I think.
Yep.
So a congressman, you know, so he's got the chops to be in the fight kind of thing. They can't push him around. He knows his Second Amendment stuff really, really well. And I believe that it was because he's a familiar face going into the second half of this New York lawsuit. And I think it's a little bit of all of that. And they believe that he can be that continuity. But when you really look at it, if the New York AG is looking for change from that, Bob Barr a year ago was put into the thing. So he really is kind of a mid-level change candidate, regardless for the optics of it. So it gave continuity yet change at the same time.
Okay. All right. That makes sense. And, you know, and I had just mindlessly speculated as I was following along with Stephen Gutowski's tweets when he could get outside the board meeting that maybe it was the fact that, you know, Bob Barr is more of a face, if you will. He's got extensive experience talking to the media. And this is something that, honestly, the NRA has lacked for the last 5 years. As the NRA, the lawsuits have gone on, the litigation has been taking place. Wayne LaPierre wasn't on TV. He wasn't doing interviews.
No.
And maybe it's because he didn't want to, you know, get asked all these questions that had nothing to do with gun bans or things of that nature. But it was noticeable. You know, the NRA used to have a presence on the Sunday shows. We would expect to see the NRA push back very publicly when there is a gun control effort. And I think Bob Barr, I think you're right. I think he does have the chops to serve in that role. So I could talk with you about this for probably 12 and a half hours, Amanda, but I'm not going to. How do you feel? You talk again about these dynamics here. You say that everybody on the board wants to see the NRA strong. It's a matter of tactics. It's a matter of strategy. How do you do that? You've got the trial coming up in July, right? And so this is, as you say, this is part two. We've had the trial over the NRA officers and executives.
Mm-hmm.
But this is actually the organization on trial in July, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so this is where the judge could say he's taken the death penalty off the table, right? Letitia James said, I want to dissolve the organization. He said, no, we're not going to do that.
Right.
The members are victims here, if you will. So that would be punishing the members. But he could appoint a special monitor, right, to sort of babysit and mind the NRA. What are some of the other options that are available to the judge? What's at stake in this trial in July?
You know, There's this line on the stuff that the lawyers have been informing us, and I'm not clear enough to be able to know where that line of demarcation is for me to be able to say what I learned inside the room versus outside the room. There's a lot swimming in here, but I don't know where that line is, and I can't tell you that. But let's talk a little bit about the special monitor.
Sure.
Because that's really been public. And one of the things that I've done is I've really tried to be public with my thoughts and my opinions and putting things out there, But at the same time, I'm not, there's been members who have demanded that I tell them how I'm going to vote and what I'm going to do and all this. And it's like, there's a difference between you understanding fundamentally where I'm coming from and that I'm voting for the best of the NRA and me telling you all the tactics and the optics and everything we're going to do before we do it so that we get shut down before we get there because you want to sit on your sofa and tell me I needn't do that. So in that same group, they're like, well, we need a monitor. We need this. We need that. I don't disagree that we may need more awareness on different levels, but I do not believe that we need an outside monitor. I believe that the vote that the members did in for the compliance officer is a step in the right direction. I believe that some of the stuff that we're talking about with the board asking different questions and feeding that back to the management team saying, okay, here's these things, tell us either why they'll work, why they won't work, what's going on. And I believe kind of we've gotten knocked in the head like a cartoon character going, okay, now we see that we need to see, right? But if you give us a monitor assigned by the same group who wanted to kill us,
right?
And then you give them the ability to have scope creep to expand whatever their investigation is or whatever they're asking or whatever they're doing, that monitor can slow walk anything we do for the election. Mm-hmm. That monitor can slow walk anything we do on a bill or a lobby. And, you know, think about the damage that can happen by embedding an anti-gun, potentially anti-gun person into the most pro-gun organization in the United States. And then saying that everybody's got to report to them. That is what we definitely, definitely do not want.
Yeah.
And that's the reason why we don't want it. Look at what some of the monitor stuff is. Look at what the court, the same time that they are going after the NRA, New York is sharing the courtroom with going after Donald Trump. Tell me it's free and fair and, you know, you can use them as an example of what we're going to face.
Absolutely. I think that's absolutely right. You know, I hope that we can talk more about the trial as it gets closer. But, you know, what would you tell those either NRA members who are still there but haven't donated or mm-hmm. you know, those folks who would buy a membership every year and they've let their membership lapse over the past couple of years? Is it time to come back, excuse me, to the NRA? I mean, you're somebody who, again, has been advocating for these reforms. Do you think that a corner has been turned here?
Yes, I do. I really do. I think a corner has been turned. I definitely think it's time to come back. I know that the leadership is putting out a goal to say that we want 10 million members by the year 2030. So that's going to, so, you know, good management, good leadership gives you a long-term goal and says, this is where I want everyone working toward. So Bill Bakkenberg, in his acceptance of being the first vice president, set that goal and fed it, handed it, offered it to the board members and said, okay, what can you do? What ideas do you have toward 10 million members by 2030? Because one of the things the NRA has done for a long time is they've got members, but then when there's a life member in the family, in a lot of cases, everybody else believes that they're a member of the NRA by de facto because somebody in their household is a member.
Right.
So there are the official members, and then there's that quasi next circle of unofficial members, right? And so if our goal is to get the unofficial members to become members so that they can expand their circle one more time, think about it as a pebble in the water in the rings, right? Just everybody step in one circle, you know, whatever. And the NRA will once again be the group that when they say vote for this person or don't vote for this person, people listen. And it has strength.
All right, last question for you. Mm-hmm. And this is just for you personally. I'm not asking the opinion of the board or anything else, but how important do you think it is that the NRA actively recruit across the 2A spectrum? Listen, as you all know, there are a lot of gun owners out there who are not MAGA Republicans. There are a lot of gun owners out there who say, you know, I'm a Second Amendment supporter, but I don't feel comfortable in the NRA because it's a bunch of, well, they think it's a bunch of guys who look like me, frankly, who won't respect them, who will look down on them, who will denigrate them. I don't think that's the case. But how important do you think it is for the NRA to do outreach to, what if you want to call it gun culture 2.0 or whatever,
right,
people beyond the sort of traditional base of the conservative Republican gun owner?
Yeah. And I even just call it, you know, the dude in the plaid shirt with a beard. Right. So, and if
point
you look
taken.
Right there, boom. But right now we have 16 members of the board who are female, which I think is a huge shift. We've actually got board members that are in their 40s now. So there's some changes there. We have some diverse, and I don't know how that they don't all look the same. Let's just say, you know, they anything from, and it's not even just looks. I mean, so we've got the age spectrum, we've got the, you know, male versus female. We've pretty much got all the colors of the rainbow involved in there in a manner, and that keeps expanding. And I think that there's a huge benefit to that. That, you know, Rick Actor can reach people that I can't reach, you know, and yet I can reach people that Charles Cotton can't reach. And so if each one of us goes out to the people that resonate with us. So here's an example. I, for years, taught concealed carry classes with my brother. And my brother is often mistaken for you. I mean, so
oh, really?
You have the same look. Actually, the internet sometimes offers your picture for his and vice versa. So we teach together, and there are people in the classroom who will call me their instructor and him the assistant. And there are other people who will call him the instructor and me the assistant. And it's their vantage point from exactly the same presentation in exactly the same classroom. And so that's how I see the board, is something that Rick says will resonate, and I could say the exact same thing and it won't. And so us looking at, and when we pick the board, I ask each and every one of you, don't pick a name that you know because you know it. Read the bios. Go through it and read the bios and say, and before you start even reading the bios, say, these are the things that are important for me. And then start looking for those skill sets in the board bios. Because I think then we will get people picked solely for skill set. I tell people in elections a lot that Captain Crunch would be elected because everybody knows his name. And that's the part we want to avoid.
That's true. That is absolutely true. Amanda, unfortunately, we've got to leave it there. I really do appreciate you coming on the program. I hope we can have you back again very soon. But thank you again for all of your efforts this weekend. It truly is appreciated, not only by those NRA members who were in attendance, but a lot of folks who were not able to be there in Dallas as well. And I really do thank you for coming on the show today.
Well, thanks for having me, and I appreciate it. Anytime, just give me a holler.
My thanks once again to Amanda for joining us on the program. She is a rock star. Speaking of rock stars, Jim Wallace of the Gun Owners Action League, the 76th board member elected at the NRA annual meeting. He's going to join us here in just one second. But before we get to his conversation, let's talk about this for a moment. At the very heart of our democracy lies a principle that we hold sacred, free speech. It's the cornerstone that supports every freedom we cherish. Yet in today's digital age, discussions about our wealth, our rights, and our future are being silenced or overshadowed in mainstream narratives, leaving many feeling voiceless in conversations that are crucial to our financial independence and security. This is where Wealth Protection Research steps in, armed with a mission that's never been more critical. Wealth Protection Research is not a financial advisory firm. They're defenders of free speech, committed to giving a voice to the silenced. Wealth Protection Research tirelessly seeks out financial experts, the voices that challenge prevailing narratives, especially as we navigate the uncertainties of the 2024 election. Wealth Protection Research has created a 2024 Election Wealth Protection Report. This free report highlights the three best ideas for protecting and growing your money heading into the 2024 election. It contains ideas the mainstream media won't touch. Listeners can get it absolutely free when you text IDEAS to 76626 to claim your free copy. If you believe in the sanctity of free speech and the importance of financial freedom, then act now. Text IDEAS to 76626 to claim your free copy of this 2024 Election Protection Report. It's time to widen the scope of what we're told, to hear the ideas the establishment doesn't think you can handle, and to take control of our financial destinies. Text IDEAS to 76626 to claim your free copy. All right, now let's talk to Jim Wallace of the Gun Owners Action League. Again, elected the 76th board member at the NRA annual meetings. Now, that's not Jim's first time on the, you know, on the board here. He was elected in 2020 after, by the way, all of the scandals broke. He unfortunately was not reelected during the regular elections this year, but it did, again, win a seat on the board by winning the 76th director election at the annual meeting. He, like Amanda, was a part of that marathon meeting on Monday, and I want to get his take and his thoughts on what happened. Let's chat with Jim Wallace of the Gun Owners Action League. Big Jim Wallace, thank you, sir, for coming on the program today.
Thanks, I think.
I know it was a long, long Monday, then Tuesday, long travel day back. And here it is, not quite bright and early Wednesday as we sit down for our conversation. But yeah, it's been a long couple of days. So I really do appreciate you carving out a few minutes. First of all, congratulations on your election as the 76th board member.
Again, thanks, I think.
Well, yeah, right.
Yeah. There was a lot of people, and I mean a lot of people, that helped me win that slot. And it was crucial to what happened. I mean, not that I'm anybody special, but, you know, people put aside differences and knew what needed to be done. And there's not a lot of people that actually vote. I mean, considering 72,000 people go, maybe 400 or 500 people will actually vote in that.
Yeah.
Election. Crucial.
I mentioned that in my coverage on Monday. I was really disappointed to see that, But I'm still at the same time glad to see that you won that.
So everybody, I mean, volunteers were out constantly for 2 days, you know, trying to push people into that election room and ta-da, you know, and I would pass people in the hallway, you know, both in the center and at the hotel. Hey, I voted for you. And I would say, damn you, you know, joking.
My wife
wasn't there.
Well, now you're still in it, buddy, for at least another year. So let me just ask you I'll ask you the same open-ended question I asked Amanda a little bit ago. How do you feel coming out of the board meeting on Monday, besides exhausted?
Yeah, ecstatic. I would say re-energized, but not this moment. This was a really long project. Just after the board meeting in January, there was a small group of us that just started to talk a lot, whether it's text or phones or Zoom, just, you know, what do you think about this? We started to learn a lot more information that come out in the court, you know, court cases that happened in March. And we really decided that the NRA, I guess, needed a breath of fresh air. We didn't like the way things were going. And I actually used the analogy many times, even talking to leadership, that rightfully so, leadership was laser beam focused on this court case. And the problem, though, is I used the old analogy of, you know, in the million years ago, when the warriors would leave the village to fight the enemy, they were victorious, and then they came home and the village had been burnt to the ground, you know? So because it was my belief that the laser beam focus on the trials, pretty much everything else was being ignored, and that can't happen. So we really got together, decided we weren't going to try to pull something swift, weren't going to try to break the rules. We're going to do everything the way we're supposed to do above board, and worked extraordinarily hard for almost 3 months. And by the time we got to the NRA annual meeting of directors, we had a plan in place. And again, it wasn't a coup. It wasn't an overthrow or angry. Matter of fact, as much as, you know, people don't like Charles Cotton, I will hand it to him. He ran that meeting with the utmost professionalism.
On Monday?
On the board okay. meeting. So not so much at the annual meeting of members, but at the board meeting. So we had a slate of officers, and we announced our plan more or less to the board of directors that weekend. And we were, I got to say, pretty darn successful. You know, we did not get the presidency. We only lost that by 7 votes. So if we had swung 4 people, we would have had it. But our slate of officers, our slate, we ended up winning the first vice president, the second vice president, and the new executive vice president slot. So long and short, history was made.
I don't disagree with you at all. But I do want to ask you, though, and yeah. I apologize if this is a bit of an uncomfortable question. But I don't know Bob Varr very well. We've had conversations over the years, like at the, you know, hotel lobby during an annual meeting. I think there was one evening where he gave me a cigar and we smoked a cigar before we headed off our separate ways for dinner. Very nice guy. I have nothing against Bob Varr. But I guess my question is, Jim, do you think that Bob Varr is willing to work with the reformers? Because he was not the reform candidate, right? He was the pick of the nominating committee. How concerned are you that that's going to be a point of friction between the office of the president and then the other officers? Or do you think that we will be able to, that the NRA will be able to present a unified front, at least in terms of its leadership?
Well, without having a crystal ball, and I never try to predict this stuff, but
sure.
Here's at least a little silver lining. The legal people involved, whether they were on the board or somebody we hired, kind of gave the board some advice of, if you're heading to a transition, you also need some stability. Because if this had happened, like I said, in the worst case scenario, where it was a rip-roaring fight, you know, and people were swearing at each other, that would not have gone well at the bench trial in July. The judge and the attorney general would have looked at us and said, my Lord. So I think that's what some of the people thought of, was they still wanted somebody that had been through this court fight to still be there as part of the leadership team. I didn't feel that way, but others did. And that's why we have elections. And that's why we operated in the manner in which we operated. And I think between the two very energetic new vice presidents and the fact that we established a solid EVP, and I know there's some people that look at that and go, well, he was part of the Wayne cabal. Doug is one of the most professional people I've ever dealt with, especially in this world. And he has saved the NRA millions of dollars over the years. And one of the reasons we could convince people, and nothing against Ronnie Barrett, I love him, because it was almost a no-lose situation between him and Ronnie Barrett. So, but Doug knew the staff, absolutely knew everybody involved, had already had a plan in place, and was ready to rock that night. There was no lead time. Boom, he was in, he was running.
You know, that is, and I'm so glad you brought up the staff, because we've been talking so much about NRA members who obviously, again, are critically important. The NRA is a membership driven organization. The power of the NRA comes from its members.
Yep.
But there are so many incredible people who work for the NRA. And, you know, one of the best parts of doing Cam and Company for NRA News for all of those years was getting a chance to meet and talk with the NRA staff, excuse me, not just over at ILA, but in general operations. You know, I was always so impressed by the dedication of the people who work there. And I know the morale has been in the toilet for a long time. You know, we saw this open letter purportedly from NRA staff get released over the weekend, begging for change. And basically saying this can't, we can't keep going on this way.
No.
So the fact that you do have an EVP in there who, you know, came from NRA staff, he may have been high up on the food chain, but was still a part of, you know, the NRA staff who can understand very, I think, explicitly the challenge that the staff has faced. I think that is a really good thing for the organization as a whole, because members need, you know, a professional, dedicated staff in place to make sure that the NRA is operating as effectively as it can. And there is some work to be done there. A lot of folks have gone away. They've either left of their own accord, or, you know, the budget cuts have been made and they're no longer around. So the staff that remains, you know, I have an awful lot of respect for those men and women who are, you know, doing what they can to keep the ship afloat. And I hope that Doug Hamlin's leadership is going to be good for the staff as well as the membership.
Well, and Cam, that points to what I said about the laser beam focus on the trials.
Yeah.
That everything else was second place. And the other analogy I used when I was talking to some of the leaders, because I did talk to them about this, and I said, listen, you know, I'm being former Army, all of our generals and high-ranking officers are off somewhere in a protracted battle, but they've left the Army to its own devices. That's death for an Army. You can't do that. If you knew you were going to be this focused on something else, you should have put somebody else in charge to run. Doesn't mean you had to give up your office, but just have the board put somebody else in temporary charge of everything else that needed to be done. And because, again, you don't want to have a victory and then come back and the village is gone. So, but you're right. You know, I saw the eyes of all the employees and the staff as we went through this week, and the look on their face was just, please help us. And I am proud to say that the board delivered. And we'll see what happens. I will say that, you know, one of the things I know people are expecting is that tomorrow the NRA is going to change and it's going to do all the things that they wanted the NRA to do all these years. I know this is hard to say because I'm not a very patient guy. You got to have some patience, folks. You got to give this new team time to assess, evaluate, and restore. You know, you just have to, because we were down to a skeleton crew. And, you know, Doug Hamlin and the new leadership are going to have to look at everything top to bottom at the NRA, and that's not going to happen tomorrow. And then they're going to set in place a plan to bring us back, and that's not going to happen tomorrow either. That's going to take some time. So what I'm asking people to do is all that energy that you used for all these whatever years to bring change we think has been delivered. Now take that energy, refocus, and once we come up with a plan, use that energy to then rebuild and restore the NRA to the greatness that it should have been.
All right, so we had to stop for a second. I promise you didn't miss any big secret that Jim revealed, but dog started barking in the background. It happens to me every time somebody, you know, comes to the door with a post office deliver mail or something like that. So we did have to stop for just one second. I'm going to re-ask the question that I was asking when we had to quit there, which again is, what can the average NRA member do right now? I know you're counseling patients, but what can they do to help rebuild the organization? Because again, so much of the power has been vested in the office of executive vice president, right? I should say the authority of the NRA, the power of the NRA comes from its members.
Right.
But who has the power within the NRA has typically been the EVP. And I hope that actually changes and that the board has more power going forward, that it's not just so top down. But what is your advice to somebody, you know, who's still got their NRA membership, or maybe they're thinking, all right, it's time to come back. I'm encouraged by what I see. Mm. What can they do to help rebuild the organization?
There's a lot of power in pride, and we haven't seen that in a long time, and rightfully so. I would say there's still people out there. Yeah. You won these elections, but you know, I'm going to watch for a while. Okay. Watch for a while. Test us, make sure we're doing our job. We want you to do that. You know, it doesn't mean we're going to deliver, you know, we're not going to drop a team of attorneys because you had a license issue in California. You know, we just can't do that stuff like that. So,
right.
But on the grander scale, the greater things that we do to bring pride back to being an NRA member is huge, because if you're proud to be part of something, you spread that. And that's going to, once we, if we do what we hope we can do to restore the faith and the pride in being part of the NRA, that's going to spread like wildfire. Because the other thing, Cam, that we talked about in our small group was the survival of the NRA is not just the Second Amendment. We truly believe the survival and restoration of the NRA is imperative to saving this country. Because the NRA, and that's why we were attacked so bad from New York. Not because of something Wayne did. They could care less about that. They attacked us because they wanted to destroy us, because we're the last citizen organization left in this country that had the power to stand up and just say no. So if we can do what we are setting out to do and rebuild and restore the pride of being part of this organization, that can't help but spread. You know, and you know, the typical thing is, well, go to a banquet, raise money. You know, what that'll come. But pride is the most important part right now.
All right, I'm gonna ask you the same last question I asked Amanda. And I'm curious to get your perspective. Living in Massachusetts, in blue state, where you have what, three Republicans in the state senate right now?
Oh, we have four now.
Woo! Oh, hey, how about that? How important is it to you, Jim, that the NRA actively reaches out and engages to gun owners who are not necessarily conservative? They're not MAGA Republicans, but they are gun owners. They are Second Amendment supporters. The NRA is ostensibly a single issue organization, and there are a lot of gun owners who don't look like me or vote like me or think like me. And I'm okay with it. Right. Oh, God. Can you imagine if every gun owner in this country had this ugly mug? I want my NRA to welcome them.
Yes.
And I want them to feel at home in that organization, because one of the best things about going to an annual meeting for me was always meeting the people and just having a chance to talk to people's background, right? Just find out where they were from, what they did, why they were there, why they were gun owners. And everybody has such a fascinating story.
What's your story?
Right. Yeah. So how important is that to you, that is also a part of the NRA's reform?
It is incredibly important to me personally. And I always operate Gun Owners Action League like this. We are legitimately the biggest tent organization there is. I don't care what you do, who you believe. It's the Second Amendment, because in a great example, you saw, I always mispronounce the case name, the Vulu case out of New York, the First Amendment case, where the ACLU actually argued the case for us, because they completely understood that this wasn't just an attack on the NRA. This was an attack on the nation as a whole, because in their eyes, well, if you can do that in a blue state, what can happen in a red state? What can happen here if this is allowed to stand? The Second Amendment belongs to everybody. Whether you utilize it or not, it's yours. And I have been a huge supporter of being the biggest tent we can possibly have, possibly be. And it's just simple. It's welcoming. I mean, the training aspects nationwide have changed dynamically in the last 10 or so years, maybe even a little longer, to not only accept but encourage what I guess would be considered non-typical groups that are coming in. And I'll give you a great example. This was probably 10 years ago. I had met with several people from the Rainbow community separately who were NRA instructors, still are. And I said, what can we do to help? And, you know, because everybody should have the right to protect themselves. I was horrified to learn that many people in that community were scared to come to our ranges, come to our clubs, because they thought they would be attacked. And I said, wow, we've got a lot of work to do. If that impression is out there, and as you know, in this world, perception is reality. So I think we've come an awful long way. I mean, just look at some of the people who were on the board and ran for the board. It's really, you know, it's it's getting to the point where there are no more excuses to not be part of the Second Amendment crowd.
Right.
So, and the more we teach that, I think the better off we're going to be.
All right. Jim Wallace, I know we're going to have many, many more conversations like this in the months ahead, but again, yeah. Congratulations. I am glad. And listen, I mean, we talk about this. I don't want to be overly optimistic. I don't want people to think that I'm trying to blow, you know, sunshine and rainbows up their butts. This was a really good step, and I agree with you and Amanda, but there are other challenges that remain. You mentioned the trial that's coming up in New York in July. There is the issue of rebuilding the trust, right? So I think I am pleased with what happened at the annual meetings. I am very pleased to see that the reformers carried the day in so many of these races. I'm encouraged to hear what you and Amanda have told me, what some other board members have told me privately. But I don't want people to think that, okay, NRA is back on track now. Everything's fine. This is a work in progress, and there is going to be work that NRA members can do to help.
They need to test us. They need to challenge us to do what we have set out to do. But I will equate this, because we've had this conversation, to the Bruin decision. When we got the Bruin decision, everybody said, we won, it's over. And you and I both knew, now the work begins.
Right.
And that's the same here. This was an historic win. The work that went into this, people will really never know about. But now that we're in the door, now we got to run, you know, now we got to steer the ship. So it's not an easy task. Now the challenge really begins. And I hope our members will hold us accountable and be involved. Find your local board members, stay in touch with them, be open with them. They'll be open with you. And hopefully we will restore the pride that belongs in being part of the NRA.
Well, Jim Wallace from the Gun Owners Action League, member of the NRA's board of directors. As always, my friend, it is so good to see you. Thank you for joining me on the program. And I look forward to continuing the conversation very soon.
All right, Cam.
Now, my thanks once again to Jim Wallace and Amanda Sefakul for joining me here on the program. I hope that this gave you a little bit more information about how we got to where we are, as well as the path forward for the National Rifle Association. You know, I am not one. I've been very open about the fact I want to see a strong NRA. I don't want to see the NRA go away. I think the Second Amendment community is better off with an effective NRA, but it has not been effective over the last few years. And I am hopeful this is a good first step towards, as Jim said, regaining the trust of members and former members, of having pride in the NRA, and the NRA, again, being as effective a voice for gun owners as it can be. We're not there yet, but the journey of 1,000 miles starts with a single step, and a big step in the right direction was taken, not only during the elections for the board, but at the members meeting on Saturday with the election of the 76th director, and yes, the action that the board of directors took during that marathon meeting on Monday. So this is not the end of our conversation any more than this is the end of the NRA's challenges. We are going to continue talking about this in the days, weeks, and months ahead. But again, my appreciation to Amanda Sefakul and Jim Wallace for joining me on today's program. And my thanks to you for being a part of the program, as always. We'll see you back here tomorrow. We're going to be talking with John Diedrich from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel about a great event that was held last week. Talking about the intersection of mental health and firearms. But this wasn't gun control activists telling you, don't own a gun. Right. This wasn't politicians saying, oh, you know, if we just had red flag laws. This was a conversation led by gun owners and Second Amendment supporters. And it was a conversation for gun owners and Second Amendment supporters. And again, we'll talk about that on Thursday's Cam and Company with John Diedrich. I would encourage you to check out BarryandArms.com throughout the day. We'll keep you up to date on all of the latest Second Amendment news and information from all across the nation. And if you like what you see, I would encourage you to become a VIP or VIP Gold member. Just use the promo code SAVEAMERICA, and you can get 50% off of your VIP membership. You're going to get exclusive content, an ad-free experience, the ability to comment on stories, but you will also be supporting the independent pro-Second Amendment journalism that we're doing at Bearing Arms. Things like these interviews today. You're never going to see the New York Times or NBC News or the Washington Post sit down and have a discussion with Amanda Suffolk Cool or Jim Wallace unless they are castigating them, trying to shame them for supporting the Second Amendment. It's not what this is about. You're on Bearing Arms or Cam and Company. All right, enjoy the rest of your Hump Day Wednesday. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Until then, be well, be safe, and be free.